come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
And welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday, the Freak Show happens, whether you like it or not, right here in the dank, dark basement. I'm your host, Colin. I'm surrounded by internet radio superstars, including
Travis,
Chris,
Gary.
And welcome, Chris, our special guest this week.
Woo-hoo. Special guest star.
And this week we watched my film pick, and it was House of Wax from the year 1953, directed by a guy named Andre Dutoit, which we found out for a 3D movie. This guy,
forgetting one important thing. In 3D.
That's right. We very watched good 3D. It in 3D, thanks to Warner Brothers' new Blu-ray.
And new 3D at the time, which was pretty gnarly, as if from the Wikipedia page. The first color 3D film.
And first from a major studio.
Yes.
Because what they did was there was a movie that came out the year prior to this called Bwana Devil. Bwana Devil? It was like an African safari kind of thriller or something like that. And that was the first movie done in
black and white.
Yeah, yes. But widely distributed, I believe.
And when was Creature? Because wasn't Creature?
That was 54. So that was right in this area. Because the House of Wax, I mean, well, I guess Bwana Devil kicked off the 3D phenomenon.
The original 3D phenomenon.
House of Wax was the first major studio 3D movie. And it made tons and tons of money and made the studios want to get into
a whopping $5.5 million.
What was the population back then, though? I mean, really?
Yeah,
that's a lot of money back then.
That means,
a coffee's a nickel,
right?
Especially people are like, that's fooey stuff, make believe. You know, they'd rather spend their money on whatever, automobiles and
bread. There's no international film market then either,
right?
Really. No.
That
was a lot of money back then, no doubt about it.
And it established Vincent Price as the premier horror movie star. And
then Vincent Price.
Doing his best Judge Reinhold impression.
Yeah, Judge
throughout the movie. The close talker throughout the movie. My favorite part.
But 3D only lasted about 2 years at this point in time. This was the technology that was supposed to originally get people out of their homes and away from television, because TV was new in the 50s, and so the studios needed something. They saw 3D as the great, savior of film. So it only ran for about 2 years. Every movie was pretty much made in 3D. I think in 2 years there was some 40-odd movies that were made. I mean, every single genre was done, and every big star was in one, John Wayne and, everybody. And then it kind of died out, I think, because there was projection problems. Back in the day, what they were doing was they would use both, theaters would be equipped with two projectors, right? Where you would switch off reels. It'd be one reel mounted to projector number one, and halfway through it would trigger projector number two to play the second reel of the movie while the projectionist is threading, projector number one again. So that's how it would switch reels. But for 3D, they would use both projectors, both aimed at the screen, one for the right eye, one for the left eye. And so they couldn't do that switchover. So this movie actually has a built-in intermission.
10-minute intermission.
Yeah, because they had to reload the cans.
And it's
the
first 20 minutes of the film.
About 40.
It didn't seem very long.
It seemed at the beginning of the movie, fuck, what the? middle thing.
It went pretty quick.
And they didn't figure out how to put both the images onto one piece of celluloid until, I believe, mid-60s. Yeah. It sort of had a resurgence when it got a lot cheaper at that
point. All of the 1980s 3D, when 3D came back in the 80s and briefly in 83, it was all on single strip. But there's a significant, I think, resolution different, you're doing it off a 135mm film
instead of opposed to two, yeah.
Yeah, so it's half resolution right there.
And then they tried doing it on 70 to kind of compensate for that in the 80s, but people just weren't buying it.
Now, we know Vincent Price was already a pretty big radio star, but was he a household name already before this movie? Or was this just what made him a horror dude?
Well, it made him, I think both. It made him a household name that was synonymous with horror films. And then, that was the guy's career.
Most of the films The Fly and Last Man on Earth, that all came after this movie. So,
but I wonder what his radio career was. Was the radio career horror related, or was it just
so? Because when I look back in his career, he did a lot of Shakespeare and a lot of he never really landed like a big, like leading, like romantic leading man type thing. Sure. Because of, you know, I mean, he's got like an interesting face, I guess, you know, that's not traditionally, you know, handsome.
Well, and he's, well, I don't know, is he German or is he,
I know he's born here. He's born in America. Yeah. I mean, but they have like that. He has like a kind of an affected, you know, Hollywood accent at the time. They all had this kind of manufactured,
almost like the Shakespearean.
Almost, like, yeah. The announcer.
I think it's just. I think it comes through a lot of the classically trained Shakespearean actors at that time.
Laurence Olivier like kind of had that same.
It's well, he definitely has that. That voice that it can just his voice can evoke emotions in a person as you're watching his films, whether it's sorrow, fear. He just he can be creepy. He can be someone that you really feel bad for. And he displays a lot of that in this film and and a few of his others.
He was trained.
Well.
He was trained at the same theater that Orson Welles owned in London. And so he is a classically trained Shakespearean actor before he made the switch to screen, which I think explains a lot of that. I'm not sure, but yeah. I would assume.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about the day when, like, you know, in order to become an actor, you had to go through, like, there was training that you had, you know, you had to take, like, song and dance. You had to learn how to fence. You had to learn how to ride horses. You know, it was like, that was all part of it. And apparently dodge fire.
Yeah, which they did a lot of in this movie, which I was very impressed with. Yeah, I loved that fire scene. It reminded me of like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark with all the melting wax.
Well, aces. that was something that as a child watching that movie, it was creepy to me watching those heads melt away and the features shrink. And as a little kid, I'm thinking, man, is that what happens to people when they burn too? Because you don't know, you're little, you know? Yeah. And it was just really that I always remember that stuck.
Well, yeah,
with
I
me,
wonder
it
was like, what
faces.
Is creepy about melting wax, right? Because I mean, you have seen a lot. I mean, yeah, it's one of those things that
because
is.
Because it's like a humanoid feature that, you know, it's a humanoid face that's melting. Yeah, I think that's the creepy.
You like
thing
expect
about
it to start fucking screaming or run or something like that.
Yeah, it's just got a natural creepiness. It's like I'm the same way watching dolls burn in movies. It's creepy.
Yeah, watching dolls burn.
Yeah.
Ah. The
great.
Stationary.
Now I'm gonna have nightmares. I should have just shut up.
With the burning dolls. That's my new band name.
The helpless paralysis of inanimate but seemingly lifelike creatures.
Yeah,
burning.
Well, it's interesting, you know, you were talking about that scene, the fire scene. I mean, the movie's...
which is the opening scene, kind of like...
Yeah, you know. It's definitely the inciting incident, if
Vincent
you will.
Price plays a sculptor who works in wax and has this wax museum, and his business partner double-crosses him, or wants to get out to invest his money in something else. So he, because there's insurance on
the place... Well, he wants Vincent Price to do, like, Chamber of Horrors, like, really gory
exploitation.
Stuff. Exploitation. Oh, yeah, exploitation, where he's like, I only make things of beauty. My hands.
My wax museum's art.
Yeah. Well, and he has that underlying insanity that the great artists have, I think, you know, where he believes his figures talk.
He like, is like almost insane from the get-go.
Yeah.
But you have to have that, right, for where he becomes later. I mean, I guess maybe you wouldn't buy it if he wasn't talking to his creations at that point. I don't know. But they burn the place down, and that's where all these figures melt. But, you know, watching that scene, I like the way, you know, we talk about, you know, how filmmakers now do like these long takes, you know, and it's like, ooh, look, they did like this long take where they're steady camming through everything. But back then, you know, for this, I mean, there is still kind of that sense of the like photographed stage play, right? It's like
you're so looking at one big, side, one side of the room.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like a
just
sitcom.
Kind of trucks through it. Yeah, we follow
every once in a while the bodies fly through, and
But I've always liked it because then, you give those actors those marks where they're going to stop here and say these lines. He's going to go over here, put a hat down, and like, I mean, I like that because it does feel like, you know, you don't go in a room, stand around, and talk to your friend. You know, you usually do something.
It's definitely proscenium staged, if you will, where it's almost there is a missing wall that we're going to put the camera on.
Right. We never turn it around. You never look.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a three-walled thing. But it's impressive because they built, like, apparently, you know, from what we see later.
It's like a two.
This whole, you know,
two-floor kind of museum. It's pretty deep.
Yeah.
Well, even the entryway, the way that pans in to the entrance. It's, you know, when they have the opening night. It's a really cool effect.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that's on a soundstage. on some studio lot, which was probably massive at the time.
Yeah, that's what I was like.
Would be a huge luxury nowadays.
Is there just fewer movies that they were shooting at the same time, so they had that much space? But when you go back,
they just knew it was going to be 3D. It's like, we need space.
Yeah.
Well, why make it 3D without space?
You know, Warner Brothers. Yeah, Warner Brothers is also. I mean, they're still very much a machine in their studio releases, and this was the first tentpole, if you will, in their big slate for that year. So they invested a lot of money in it. So they probably gave it their biggest space that they had available, which was formidable at the time.
Yeah.
Well, and it definitely, I enjoyed this 3D over what we see now in 3D. It just felt like you really were seeing the depth of the movie. I don't feel that when I think it's modern.
It's 3D. Almost like everything was in focus.
Yeah.
You know, everything from the background to the forward, it's all in focus. So it's like, okay, you can see the depth.
Well, like the in the music hall, when they went to the music hall, you've seen the two levels of the chandeliers and then the girls on the stage. Yeah. And then even when the girls were dancing on the stage, you can see all the way back to the girl. You can see the depth even on the stage. It was just incredible to me. I really love that a lot.
You know, I've been thinking about this because I'm like, why are, you know, modern 3D movies shot so shallow? You know, I mean, the planes of depth, I guess, are very shallow. Compared to everything from this period of time is shot like this. You know, there's a significant amount of depth both behind and in front of the screen that you're watching, right? And I think what it comes down to is the, I don't know, somebody maybe out there listening to this might be able to help me out. But I think that the monitors that they, you know, because they're able to actually watch 3D live when they're shooting now, right? Because they've got these LCD, you know, LED monitors. And when you're using the active glasses, right, when you're looking at an LCD monitor, sometimes you get this effect called ghosting, which I don't know if you saw any of that tonight on this, but it's when you get when, like, say the left eye is supposed to only be seeing the left eye picture, but a little bit of the light of the right eye gets in there. So you see like almost a faint double image, you know, and that's called ghosting. It's very prevalent on LCD television sets because the light is like right there. You know, it's the pixels lighting up. So apparently, you know, when you get, they call it parallax, when the images are mm-hmm. separate, when you get them too far apart, you end up with like this ghosting effect. Whereas, you know, DLP technology takes care of that. And when you see stuff projected in a movie theater, that you don't see that problem as all, because it's the lights projected on the screen reflected back to you and it's canceled out in the glasses. So I'm wondering, are like the directors sitting there watching these LCD monitors and they're like, okay, let's set the shot up. No, I can see ghosting. It's like, no, we got to keep the ghosting to a minimum. And so they're by doing that,
so they cut the depth to
the depth,
right?
Because they know that this is where it's going to show up on, you know, when it goes to home video. Most people have LCD television sets, or
they could be making that consideration. I think they are using a lot of composite in their special effects in a lot of 3D movies, and that also compresses. You know, it's like everything is in the foreground. That's this part we want in the foreground, and this part we want in the second ground. This part we want in the background, and so it's almost like 2.5D, if you will, or some of it like fake 3D. Yeah.
Well,
and so
to
many
me,
of them,
and we don't have that
conversions
in
too. They were shot 2D and then made into 3D.
A lot of the modern, and I'm not talking 80s because there's a little bit of revival in the 80s, but a lot of the new ones, things that could be 3D, they skip over. Like the Barker in this movie when he's doing the paddle balls, they're flying right at you. I mean, you can, you know.
Well, they don't want to do that because they're always going to have a 2D version for home video. So they don't want to do that shit where when you're at home watching Jaws 3D and you're like, what the fuck? You know, the person's like, you know.
Well, you and I went and saw like Ghost, the second Ghost Rider together, and the scene where the chain's flying out of his mouth, which would have been a cool scene if it was flying at you out of his mouth. No, it's shot to the side, and it really had no 3D effect to it at all.
But I don't know if that was that shot for 3D.
I think it was shot. I think Ghost Rider 2 was actually shot in 3D. I know there's a website where you can go to and you can find out what movies are shot that way. But it seems like so many of them are converted after
that. Because the flame coming out of somebody's mouth is a special effect. Because it's not practical. You're not having, it's much like the fog in this movie. You could tell that.
Oh, yeah, the smoke.
Angles. Yeah. You're getting an actual three-dimensional image of what a three-dimensional image of fog would look like. Mm-hmm. Because you're working with a two-dimensional fire representation, that's existing over a shot of Nicolas Cage breathing fire.
Right, yeah.
Does that somehow flatten that image to make it look somehow less 3D? Well, that's, I don't know.
Do it, because, I mean, I've seen stuff that, you know, like, I mean, I saw a bunch of, you know, when they did Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton one, for instance, you know, they it was all CG 3D stuff, like bouncing off of the screen and stuff. And it was, you know, I mean, even something like, what, in Gravity, there's like he reaches for a bolt, I think, that's floating out, you know, into the audience and grabs on it. I mean, all those things are probably added after the fact. So you can do it. I think you can calibrate, you know, like how far out this is. But they never actually seem to take things, you know, right up to your face, whereas stuff in the 50s and the 80s would try to like come out and, you know, hit you upside the head with the image, which was cool. I mean, like, because if I'm paying for a 3D movie, damn it, that's what I'm expecting. Yeah. Is I want at some point the spectacle.
They don't want the gimmick. Yeah, they don't want the gimmick. They just want the movie. They don't want. But it's like, but you're making a fucking gimmick movie. It's if it's going to be in 3D, that's a gimmick.
Yeah, we don't want a 3D Meg Ryan Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
But I suppose that's one vote.
The thing too, it's like you knew
it'd be
like,
so romantic in 3D,
right? But House of Wax was obviously shot to be shown in 3D. Now we shoot movies with the idea that, like, most people are going to see them in 2D. They're also going to see show them in a premium format, which is 3D or IMAX 3D. You know, so it's like, yeah, it does feel like they're kind of hedging their bets as far as, you know, who's, you know, are they actually going to see this movie in its intended
Because they're still only making it for the 2D. Even though they're putting in all these other versions, it's still really being made just for this one.
Well, when you look at something like Step Up 3D, I know it's probably not.
I heard it was awesome. I've never seen it.
The 3D is pretty impressive.
My wife likes to watch those movies. The 3D in those movies are definitely kind of a manufactured 3D where they're putting people on different planes within the palette.
I felt that way about Thor, though, when I saw that in 3D.
I see that, too, in things like Thor and Beowulf, the computer animated 3D. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's almost different levels.
That's how it's almost depth. Like looking through a Viewmaster to me, the new 3D.
But you're
that's
saying how I feel this with it. Doesn't look like that.
No, this was incredible. This I love. This felt 3D. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other stuff, it's seriously, it's like looking through the old Viewmasters is how I feel about it. But
it could be because they used polarizing 3D and not the blue-red 3D.
Well, see, that's actually a misnomer. The blue-red 3D was made for print. It was made for comic books and reproducing stuff on paper. Yeah. But all 3D movies, okay, so I'm going to say like 95% of movies made in 3D were made in a polaroid process, shot with two cameras and then projected.
And then reverse engineered onto one print.
Yeah,
after
but later in the,
later,
yeah,
later
in,
yeah.
The, in the decades. But yeah. I mean, they were all, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon was black and white. But when you saw it in the theater, you wore polaroid glasses, you saw it in black and white. When it was released on TV, because they couldn't. You know, you can't do Polaroid on television because it requires two different light sources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the glasses cancel out one light source and, you know, for each eye. So they did them what is called anaglyph 3D. That's a red and blue. So that was never actually no movies. That's a vastly inferior format compared to like
I've been movie shamed.
Well, you know, I mean, but it's funny because a lot of people like assume that like old 3D movies were made in that format. And now it's like now we have this opportunity to like go into the vaults and get these things back and be like, here's Fort Ty, you know, or here's what was it, Hondo or, you know, Charge at Feather River or something like that. And actually show them in. You know, their original, you know, full color 3D. They did release Dial M for Murder, the Alfred Hitchcock one. That looks pretty good too. But it looks like this.
You know? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you give me movies like this, I'll watch them. But a lot of the new 3D, I won't pay the extra for it. I did the first few, and I just wasn't that impressed with it.
Well, you talked about like layered 3D and stuff, and that's actually like one of the things that I think you can exploit in modern 3D stuff that I haven't seen a whole lot in like the, you know, the 50s, where it is kind of like you've got your background plane, your midground, which is your screen, and your foreground, which is stuff coming off the screen at you. But I saw Life of Pi, and that was, you know, I mean, again, it's when you have like somebody who's actually making a movie to make it in 3D. I think this is, you know, Travis, what you were talking about. It's like a lot of them now are made to be 2D because the director's like doesn't know anything about 3D, doesn't want to do anything in 3D, but the studio is saying, the movie will make more money if it's in 3D, so you have to do it. And that's why they're doing it. But if you have somebody like Ang Lee who wanted to do Life of Pi in 3D, he set up like these planes. There's like five or six planes, you know, in that movie, which is like just really cool to look at. It still has like a picture book kind of.
I just wish he wanted to do a good Hulk movie, but other than that. Sorry.
Maybe he did want to do it.
Maybe.
It just didn't happen.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think he set out to make a bad one. Yeah. Just
But the other thing that, you know, we were talking about earlier, just in the fire sequence of this where the place burns down, is like, you know, I've seen a number of movies now from this era where it just seems like actors at that time, like, you know, I don't know what their contracts
were. They were expendable.
Yes.
Actors were expendable.
It's a studio system.
They treated them like the real fucking, like, how they should be treated. Like, get in there,
not gods. Not gods and goddesses.
You're being you're pretending to be something. What the hell?
You're a celebrity because I made you a celebrity. Get out there.
Fire.
It's also maybe possible that, like, all these guys, I mean, it's the 50s, so, like, a lot of these guys could have came out of the service or something like that.
Oh, that's just for more, damn sure. Everybody,
you know, back
that's
then.
What it was, yeah.
No, well, like, wait, you want me to get in there with some?
Yeah, fire? People had balls back then.
Well, it's before they were insuring their butts for $2 million or their legs for $2 million. It's stupid how they treat them now.
Yeah, but I mean, it just seems like there's a couple of scenes in this where like these guys are fighting through fire. I mean, it's like
and they're the real actors. They're not stuntmen. Yeah. You can tell it's actually Vincent Price in fire, which I loved.
Yeah,
that takes cojones.
Well, yeah, because that one scene, they were right on top of it. I mean, they were inches away from it when they landed.
They'd both knock over a fucking cabinet, and the top of the cabinet would be on fire. It's like, Jesus, what if they just, like, moved, you know?
Right,
the cabinet would just move a little bit. They'd, like, their head would be on fire.
I'm sure they had a guy with a fire extinguisher if it got to that. But
yeah, I'm sure. Or, like, a few buckets of water. It was in the 50s or whatever. Yeah, like, water takes care of fire. You know?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Like, we'll be in there with a fire extinguisher if something goes wrong.
We have wigs if your hair catches. Yeah.
And that was definitely.
We own the newspapers. We'll cover it up.
Union stage.
But I do think, I don't know, I think that is a better way because, I don't know, like I said, at least actors were, to me, more in their place. Like, they're part of the movie making process. It wasn't so like, oh, you're the man. Oh, love you.
I mean, there were stars. I mean, stars came out of that system.
Oh, there was the big glamorous stars back in the day. But again,
but they were all stars because they made like fucking 70 movies and maybe like 20 of them were good. You know what I mean? Like, they just fucking... Well,
they made like 4 years.
Shit.
You became a star if, like, you know, you became a household name. Or if you being in the movie meant people would go see it. It's the same thing today.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'll go see this because so-and-so's in it. If they weren't in it, you know, would be less of, you know.
But due to the, I think more of it's due to the world of litigation that we live in now.
Everybody
sues over everything. You know, a star gets injured now on a pitcher, they might as well shut it down. They're gonna lose everything anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how it was resolved. You know, the horrible accident that happened with Brandon Lee. I don't know how that was resolved, but I'm sure, you know, somebody paid out on that. You know.
Yeah. Insurance.
Yeah,
but in this go ahead.
No, I loved how the actors had the presence of mind in that fire scene when the rail didn't break away.
Yeah,
the Price gets hit and he turns and the railway doesn't break away enough, so then he turns back towards the guy who's hitting him.
And then he breaks away
and tries to push him harder a little bit the first time, and then he has to do it again.
That's what I wonder if like Vincent Price like pushed out, like he was supposed to really throw his body weight against it and fall over, and he didn't, and there's like, god damn it, do it, we're still rolling, just fucking do it.
And there's fire, we can't do this again.
Yeah,
we don't have any more wax figures.
There is no
fire.
Second take. Getting on the first go.
I loved that. I thought
that was awesome.
That was a nice team player kind of movie.
Well, just like movies back then, it's like it didn't seem like there was much. Like, I mean, we always talk about these actors had to go through these Shakespearean, you know, they had to take fighting courses. But I swear to God, it just looks like they're just like, throw each other on each other. You know, just fucking throw your fists around and just knock each other over into the set.
Yeah.
You know, it just looks like that, which I've always thought was really fun.
Yeah.
Just really looks like those guys are fighting.
It just kind of feels like there's less, like now it seems like fight scenes are slowed down so you can like, you know, get the impact of every punch and
or the angle
edited in a way.
Angle,
but these are like shot from a distance, and it's like these guys, you know, spilling into each other and falling all over the place.
Well, these were more, especially fights back then, were shot more like brawls. Not everybody's trained in technical martial arts. That's like true. In the modern fist fights.
Yeah.
You know, these were just guys throwing haymakers, hoping one connected. Slaps. Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of makes sense, because why would a professional wax sculptor be like a their belt,
right?
You know, in kung fu or something.
It only makes beauty.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But, well, that you know, yeah, it's one of those things that I think they did change as they went along. I mean, watch John Wayne and the old fight scenes with him. They're just brawls. They're barroom brawls. That's all they are.
Yeah.
It you know, and then you started getting into the martial arts movies.
Wait, no one's throwing kicks. We better put some kicks in here.
Yeah.
It becomes more of a dance routine, a violent dance routine, I guess.
Yeah. Right.
Which is awesome in its own right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally, I love Kung Fu. Sure.
Yeah, but now it's even spilled over into gunfights. It's just as incredibly stupid.
Yeah, the gunfights I don't buy.
It's unrealistic.
It is unrealistic.
I know what it is.
I'm not seeing the movement here.
Yeah.
There's doves flying. I get that. Doves are flying while there's bullets.
That's like 20 years ago now.
I know, right? So, yeah, it's been a half an hour. We haven't even talked about this movie at all. We talked about what 3D is.
Right, we won't be ruining anything to say that Professor Jared survives the fight.
What?
And becomes a horribly
Vincent
scarred
Price survives. But he's the lead, of course.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Like his makeup, I wouldn't say is terribly like influential. Like I've seen it all over the place.
But yeah, you know, it's nothing really. I mean, it really looks like a bunch of purple veins. It looks like he's gray with a bunch of purple sided veiny face.
Yeah,
almost like what you would imagine a Batman 66 Two Face would look like.
Yeah, a little bit. And he was definitely kind of influenced by like Phantom of the Opera meets Darkman.
That's what we were thinking. Like because of the shadow time also.
Yeah,
with
the hat. And the like the black like whatever frock coat whatever it's always got that the shoulder
like
cape or whatever cape, the fuck you want to call it it's,
or
it's a frock,
Jack
right?
the Ripper also because there's an extended scene in this movie where the killer you know stalks this woman through like the foggy stalker. Streets of New York, which is all on a back lot. And I was telling Travis earlier, it's like this I've seen that scene done again in an Italian movie called Baron Blood by Mario Bava. It's got Joseph Cotten in it. Joseph Cotten plays a character who looks just like, I mean, it was like they were going for the same Vincent Price, you know, the makeup. And he's got the black hat and the cape, and he's chasing this woman around through, you know, the back lot of Italy somewhere. But, you know, so I've seen that kind of reference to it before. But so he starts stealing he kills the partner.
His partner.
And his girlfriend.
But then he starts using the bodies to be the new...
Spoiler.
I know, right? We're a spoiler show. Yeah.
Spoiler heavy.
That way we can dissect it all.
Yep, that's right.
Meaning behind it.
Yeah, so the dead bodies become... The wax figures.
Because obviously,
in the new museum,
with his burnt
new house
hands,
of wax,
he can't make the beautiful things he wants. Good, so all he can do is find beauty, dip it in wax.
His hands can't sculpt; they can only kill and maim and choke. Right. And
I really
want to
find how he found three other helpers. This is a good idea. No, I think this is a profitable business.
It was just those two.
Was it just those two?
Yeah, I think Igor Bronson's character was definitely.
But wasn't there a third?
Yeah, say it's Charles Bronson as Charles Buczynski or whatever is in this movie.
But I thought there was a third guy just when they were when Vincent Price's original benefactor betrayed him, there was another guy
Matthew
that was going to come in. Who was his name?
Matthew Burke was his original partner.
Oh, okay.
That's the guy who dies first.
There was another guy
Sidney Wallace.
Who was going to buy his stuff, and that character comes back into play, and he's showing him his new factory, and he's showing him the process of which I have a fucking great big boiling bed of
not dangerous
wax
at all.
Acme chemical.
Yeah, it looks like a fucking action figure playset or whatever. That's where get your Ninja Turtle.
it looked exactly like what the Joker falls into in Tim Burton's Batman.
I noticed
pink
that.
And everything.
I mean,
you know?
Dude, Tim Burton uses that exact thing where Jack Napier's on the bridge, he turns one way, there's cops.
Yeah.
He turns another way, there's
absolutely
cops.
Absolutely.
Like, that was in this movie.
Wow.
For sure.
And he's actually in that kind of, a similar hat and coat that,
and,
that Vincent Price wears.
Well, the Joker was created, actually in the 1940s. But Mystery at the Wax Museum was...
1930s, right. Early 30s.
Yeah,
the Mystery, which is a remake of
of the Mystery of the Wax Museum with Fay Wray.
And Joker was based on The Man Who Laughs,
but they might have did the dipping
in some
the
acid of the dipping
from the House of Wax. You know, that's how those
which is
roll.
Totally, you know, expected from Warner Brothers, who recycles everything that they've ever done.
And you were talking about Burke. Have you guys brought up Kathy yet?
No, yeah, well, that's not
the,
yet.
She's the first one who gets killed.
Right. Burke's her sugar daddy is the way it appears in the movie.
Okay, yeah. This fucking movie teaches women to be so sexually liberal because it's like, oh yeah, like you said,
you have a problem with that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Oh, you have no idea.
Hollywood, yeah, I love smut, but I could also be a pretty, like cinematic Protestant where I'm like, that's bullshit. Well, anyway, so yeah, she's all about how, like, all you gotta do is find the right one, honey. She's got her fucking stupid Betty Boop laugh or whatever, because it's just like, hey, girls, go for that, you know, be fucking stupid blonde and fucking sexy and catch your fucking man, you know?
Yeah, but they're not encouraging that. She's the one who dies.
That is true.
The strong-headed woman is the hero.
And there's definitely enough Hollywood fetish. There's a little bit of bondage going on there. There's a sexualized rack. You know, they have the woman on the rack with the corset on and
barely covered with.
But that's when Jared comes back to life, he's like, "I'll do you a Chamber of Horrors because I'm going to. I don't know. I can't do beauty anymore or something like that.
Yeah. Right, damaged goods. So he's got to do. He had to give up what he loved the most, which was his children. You know, but even he's still looking for his Marie Antoinette. That was his ultimate sculpture. And she was
destroyed.
I really
like how in that beginning scene, she was like the centerpiece of the
she
whole.
She was
like,
standing out in the middle of the room.
They made sure that her arms were at least sticking out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even if they went to one side, her arms were still sticking out.
Between two historical figures that you would want to have a female emulate, Marie Antoinette and Joan of Arc, which one do you think would... Yeah, the director chose, or the writer chose Marie Antoinette to be the idealized.
Beautiful.
Right.
And that was in the Mystery of the House Museum, or Wax Museum, so that might even been part of the original story.
Yeah, Joan of Arc was known more as a warrior.
Yeah, but was she...
Hey, we can't have women powerful.
She's supposed to be, like, necessarily beautiful?
No, not by any account, yeah,
but
really.
Marie Antoinette was...
Right, well, but it's Carolyn Jones, who we all know as Morticia Adams, played Kathy, who is...
Blonde.
Joan of Arc. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And blonde, but you can still tell by those eyes that it is Morticia Adams as soon as you see her. It's that crazy laugh. Oh, my God. I would have melted her in wax with that laugh. Yeah.
I
would have
sitting there just, I mean, even while we were watching it, like, you know, because this is set in like 1900 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like
1901, 1900, maybe 5 or 10 years after.
Yeah. And when she's like going out to meet her sugar daddy, or I'm sorry, at that point, she's going out to meet Jared, who's back from the dead posing.
Yeah, you don't know she's going, because her man obviously died. Jared killed him. We didn't mention that.
Yeah, I don't think Jared could have pulled off the sophisticated look. You know, because they said he was sophisticated looking with gray hair.
Yeah.
Jared's hands are all mangled at this point.
But he can walk. They don't know it's Jared, so they don't know that he could probably look like...
On.
I mean, yeah, he's got a wax face.
True enough.
He could look like... What's wrong with your hands? Nothing.
I was amazed that, like, at the...
he was wearing gloves.
Carolyn Jones, like, her get-up in this, like, that's just amazing. You know, it's like, you know that the women are wearing corsets and all
that
stuff.
Well, that's whole part of the bondage thing,
There was, like, she had, like, four layers, I think, like, on her top.
And we have to watch her dress.
Yeah, and get sewn into her going-out gear, and then there's gloves at the end of it, so there's, like, the only skin showing is, like, from...
But the fact that in the movie, you watch the woman get dressed,
right,
dude. That's
reversed.
What I'm talking about. Very liberal movie.
Well... But at that time, that was when they had the camera clubs. All the guys would go around. You had Betty Page, Tempest Storm, all of them out there at the camera clubs. And you would go. They would dress up in this type of outfit. Or the other thing, yeah. And the other thing is, now, and I had mentioned to you during the show, that Vampira was actually dressed up as Morticia Adams. She went to this ball in Hollywood, and that's where she was discovered. And you notice in the movie, she's cinching in her waist. Well... Vampira has the record for the smallest waist ever. Right. And if you actually see the old pictures of her, it's almost disgustingly so. She looked like she could break in half. But all of this was inspired from this movie.
Yeah.
And definitely Carolyn Jones and the way she portrayed herself as Morticia Adams.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that was also part of that. I mean, that was like
maybe part of the casting, too.
The mm-hmm. See, I don't want to say Protestant, but it was definitely like a moral. It was almost it's like the burqa of the Christian world, right? You have to put on all these layers before you go out to meet your.
But maybe those things did. But hold on,
put on the layers to cover the sexuality, like, but let's make like, you sexier by putting on the corset.
Maybe they just didn't have a metal wire and a bra back then, so you had to put on two extra things. Like, I don't know. Well,
but we established this is what, around 1900 from where
the setting, but it's made in 53. Yeah.
But what I'm saying
all
is
we saw was a watch that said 1900. Well, but
we're talking about a time where just shortly before. Before that, the tablecloth was invented to hide the legs on the tables as not to excite a man from seeing that's where the tablecloth came from, was to cover the legs of the table.
Well, I can understand.
I've never been excited by wood.
Me either.
No, you're supposed to. No, it's by seeing her knees
the shape
or whatever. Like,
is what it was.
Oh,
but yeah.
God.
Well, it does.
Her ankles below
okay, so
the
I guess
table.
Then we need to talk about the sexual politics of this movie, which is it is interesting.
Oh, it's fucking loose. It's
so
crazy.
You see a woman getting well, dressed.
It's Warner Brothers at its best. It's fetished. It's aimed at, well, you know, okay, the 15-year-old. Adolescent, well, which they still do.
The reason I bring this up is I actually been watching a lot of documentaries just talking about how I mean, just the invention of cinema has created a more liberal society. And it's one of those things like, okay, yeah, I guess you could say, well, that's good, but is it really? Because now we suffer from all this teen pregnancy. So has it been good? This gradual, yeah, okay, this we're seeing her just get dressed in a corset or whatever. But fucking fast forward to 80 years later, we see like, Jesus Christ, lady, I don't need to see your asshole, you know? It's like, dude, I mean, but just those each little step has gotten us to a more degraded cinema.
Well, it's desensitizing.
It's desensitizing, yeah.
Well, what I think is kind of disgusting is isn't necessarily the sexual expression. It's the fact that we couple that sexual expression with female empowerment, and there has to be a lot. I think we need to foster female empowerment outside of sexuality.
Yes, it should be able to be captured with their mind, not just their body.
Exactly. Wait, but this is interesting because in this, it's the reverse.
Sex is coupled with
physical violence, the threat of physical violence.
Is it?
Well, yeah. Well, the girl who we see getting undressed dies,
but she stole 20. She helped. Well, I mean, even though she didn't necessarily help, but just the idea that. Well, I mean, obviously this guy had to have seen her, right? I mean, Jared had to have seen her.
Yeah,
so he's just like, she's my perfect, you know, Joan of Arc.
That's what I always thought. That's why he killed her. I don't think she was in on it. She was too stupid to be in on it.
Right, yeah.
She didn't walk away with the money.
Yeah, she didn't walk away. I mean, she wanted the
money from her dead
fiancé. You open up on the scene where he's telling her about the money.
Right.
But it's not like she said, hey.
So let's just say, I don't think she's being punished for
anything.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's like, if the point was that in today you're coupling sexual empowerment with female empowerment, we're here. It's at the end of the movie, there's a naked girl strapped down on a table as the bad guy is about to. So she's
pour hot wax on her,
you know, to his overtures of trying to pour hot wax and freeze her in time.
Well, because he's going to
see this, you know, I mean, it's 1953.
And solidify her and petrify her in time in that perfect beauty, if you will.
Objectify her.
So the other scene is when they open the house of wax and there's these three ladies. That for some fucking reason we follow these three ladies,
Victorian.
They're the Victorian virgins. They're like a character just on the opening.
They're the ones who take us through the house of wax.
Or like what a woman is supposed to feel like in a chamber of horrors. Like they're supposed to like faint at every like mention of like murder.
but notice those are also the three ladies outside of the chamber of horror when they see the house of wax swaying their hips, going, "Oh, maybe I could do that."
Exactly. Attention of the guy. Yeah, there was like a wax like Matahari dancer or something.
Matahari.
And a woman's like, I could do that. And they're like, don't do that out here. Don't do that. It's like, God damn, this movie's just trying to turn women into whore. This is like, this is 19, what year is this?
53.
This is like the 1953.
Why do I feel like I'm watching Tommy Boy? When the hookers come and lay the trick money down.
It's like the Britney Spears. How Britney Spears is supposed to turn your daughter into a whore just for.
Well, Madonna couldn't.
Yeah, but it could capitalism.
Be, but see, here's
That's
the other thing. It's
is.
Like in 1953, I think they were a more modern society than the time period that they're portraying. So they had 50 years of progression, I guess, right?
But not on TV,
So they're able to, like, put this in the movie. Like, they're making a comment, like, look at how, you know, how they were back then, and look where we are now. We've got Jane Russell and her giant boobs and, you know, all this
and
other
they were
stuff.
Magnificent.
I mean, yeah, I guess I could see that yeah, point, so but I think the point is to put this on the screen.
Wasn't the director like, this married sexy, or this to Autumn like, Lake or something like that? I think he was married to one of the Hollywood starlets at the really? Time.
I would know. Too.
Yeah, but well, more power to him, I guess. But yeah, there definitely was. There was a lot of bondage fetishy, you know.
I mean, as there should be. I mean, it's a horror movie. I mean, that's what I appreciate about the girl getting dressed. It's like, is this the first like girl getting dressed in the horror movie? Because I mean, my favorite part of I think it's Night of the Demons. This girl gets home from school, takes a sweater off, changes the sweater. It's like, thank you. It's like, that's all I need is for you to get out of your school clothes.
You knew why I bought this ticket. That's
why. Yeah. You got to get out of school clothes.
We talked other times about
right?
it.
Yeah, right? You're trying to cater to.
You're definitely catering to.
The bondage thing came through even at that time. Well, slightly before this time, Wonder Woman was heavy in bondage in her early years. Yeah. You know, she was always being tied up, the magic lasso, all that. And then find out years later, William Michael Marsden is his name, the inventor of the lie detector.
Yeah.
Okay. He's also the creator of Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And come to find out later on, huge bondage fetish. You know, and that showed through everything else.
But that's what I'm saying. But look at
an interesting lens.
Yeah, damn it. I don't want to talk too much about Wonder Woman.
Well, there is a tie-in.
That's a whole
empowerment and sexuality.
There is a tie-in. The reason I brought it up is that Carolyn Jones, Morticia Adams, did play Queen Hippolyta on the Wonder Woman TV
Thank
series.
Thank you. Bringing that up because I was like, "Oh,
speaking of superheroes,
we're going to have to pause this so we can talk about Wonder Woman for about
a little aside." Speaking of superheroes, Vincent Price played Eggman on the Batman series.
Egghead.
Well, everybody went through Batman.
Well, Carolyn Jones was
one of them.
Marcia,
yeah.
Queen of Diamonds.
Crazy.
So yeah. Everybody was. Well, and if you look through, he also played in the Brady Bunch. He was Dr. Whitehead in the Hawaiian episode.
Who
and then
about? Vincent Price?
Vincent Price,
on TV?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the gentleman who played, where'd he go? Frank, the detective, the sergeant. I'm trying to remember his name here. Hold on a second. That's it. Dabbs Greer, Sergeant Jim Shane. He was the pastor that married the Bradys in the first episode of the Brady Bunch. So all of them, I mean, I was looking it up today, all these actors went through any TV show from the 60s to the 70s. Well,
That was one nice thing about the studio system. You're kind of guaranteed work once you were in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They just like,
if you were willing to go ahead and fight and fire
until those United Artists came around and ruined it all.
Well, but I mean, you know, and we talked about Vincent Price and he did, you know, I always remembered him as the voice of the Invisible Man at the end of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah.
You know, The Fly, Last Man on Earth.
But, he did like the cycle. Well, Vincent Price, it was interesting because he did like these big studio movies and he did like a kind of a knockoff of this even in 3D as The Mad Magician. Mm-hmm. But then he also did, you know, he would step down and do like all these kind of when movies became more decentralized, popularized, whatever. Filmmakers were able to make stuff cheap for drive-ins and stuff like that. He did like The Tingler and stuff like that for AIP.
That was really Frank cool Castle stuff.
Right? William Castle. Where he rigged up the buzzers and all the seats.
And he had the skeleton for House on Haunted Hill, the skeleton that came down.
Yeah.
Well, and Vincent Price, to me, one of my childhood memories of him, besides the movies, was...
Thriller.
That, earlier than that, he introduced on Black Widow he was the tour guide for Black Widow on Alice Cooper. Remember that song,
The Black
Widow?
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Yeah, he's the...
He was also Iron Tail in that old...
The Black Widow.
The old Peter Cottontail Christmas special. He was Iron Tail, the enemy of the Easter Bunny.
I remember him selling like some kind of... it was on like an advertisement for... What's that stuff you spray in the shower? Clean check.
Yes.
Vincent Price. I remember that too,
His long career in Hollywood.
Rids mildew stains.
Okay. So go ahead.
Ended up we could have a whole other podcast on every movie he's ever been in.
No, I'm just saying.
Let's talk about House of Wax.
But it's interesting to celebrate this guy's career, I think. And then he ended up in Edward Scissorhands, I think it was his last.
No, he did a voiceover in a cartoon, Detective something. I don't remember it. I didn't write it down. I didn't care about it. But last thing I got is he was the narrator on Thriller. But no, I love Vincent Price because, like I said earlier, out of that era, it was Karloff, Lugosi, and then Price for me. Those were my three actors in that order.
Well, Price was one of the few. I think like he was, because correct me if I'm wrong, I think Karloff came over from England, Lugosi from Hungary. I mean, there was Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, But Vincent Price was actually probably more contemporary with them in the 50s and 60s. So he was like the American horror star.
Right.
Right. I mean, I think maybe he was like the biggest of the American horror stars.
Yeah. Was Laurie from America?
Who?
Peter Laurie.
No, he's German.
German. Yeah. So see, yeah, it's got to be Price then.
So, I mean, it's just, it's fascinating that these guys had, I mean, like now you don't really have that either. You know, we're like, you know, your name is synonymous with horror.
And well, it's not the actors, it's the characters in the movies now.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Robert Englund is a guy who, like, always does horror movies, but it's like nobody ever sees any of those, right? I mean, like, Vincent Price was in stuff for, like, the majority of his career was, like, he was the guy you went to if you were making a horror film. You know, it's like, if we can get Vincent Price in it. I mean, even in the 80s, he was still doing stuff. The Monster Club and... Was it not the Screaming Starts or
he did Dead Heat in the 90s with Joe Piscopo and Treat Williams? Yeah,
because he was just that guy, he just had the creepy.
That's got to be a very 90s movie if it stars Joe Piscopo and Treat Williams.
I've got it.
That's about 91, right?
It's on Netflix. Check it out.
That sounds like 1987, actually. It sounds earlier than that if it's with Joe Piscopo and Treat Williams.
It might have been,
late 80s, it's like 88. I'm gonna pick it.
Treat Williams.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so the movie,
was there,
there were definitely some Scooby-Doo moments.
Oh yeah, the Bronson with the head thing.
You know, so Scooby-Doo's ripped off.
I think you could do that in a. I think you could do that in a wax museum. You could stand still and be.
Well, like, yeah, especially
except for like that guy's not famous at all.
Right.
Anyway.
Well but except they did explain that
Michael Jackson, Justin Bieber.
He does every face to look like his. Vincent Price even explains that when he's showing the guy in the electric.
Charles Bronson's character does every face like his.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay.
And then, when he's standing in the house of when Bronson's standing in the house of wax and his eyes move, you don't know which head is his.
Yeah,
I thought it was a clever trick.
It's a cool. It's fun. It's well shot too. I just like the way that they set those things up, and you know,
you see it from a mile away, but it was still fun.
Yeah. Well, we only say that because we've seen so many things since.
Sure. Well, but even the killer in the movie, which I don't know if we revealed yet or not, but the killer in the movie, it inspires sympathy. Even the way he moves, it's creepy. And that's all done without any words. So it's just the way that character comes across. And to me, that's a whole different kind of acting that we don't get a lot with a lot of the people nowadays, you know, with their body moves. I think. Who was the last one we were talking about that pulled it out? Oh, it was Roddy Piper in They Live. Kind of pulled off a lot of things without verbally, you know, bringing the lines. Of course, this was done a lot better in They Live, but.
Well, I like the way we were talking, too, that they have themes for everything that, you know, it cues kind of what your emotional state is supposed to be. Whenever a character thinks of Joan of Arc, there's a Joan of Arc, you know, heavenly theme. Yeah. Whenever you see the, you know, Vincent Price wandering around, there's the, you know,
was
the theremin or whatever, you know, I mean, so they're cueing, like, he's scary now, you know, at this point. And, I like there is a reveal, you know, because Dr. Jared's been back and wandering around and working with these criminals that he picked up who are his sculptors now because his hands don't work. And eventually our heroine discovers that, you know, the Joan of Arc is actually her friend who's been coated in wax. She confronts Jared and bashes him in
like
the face.
How they like,
and you find out that he's wearing a wax. His whole time, it's supposedly like a moving wax mask.
I like how they did the what you would call like the mystery clue. The idea that she had one ear pierced specifically for some certain earring or whatever. Yeah. And like, even though Vincent Price has some story about seeing her her picture in the paper after her murder and like going to the morgue and asking for the photographs, just now the idea is like, why the fuck would you
around that?
Why would you sculpture in the ear pierced or whatever? I thought that was...
Did you make sure did she even hints at the sculptor, you know? Did you see her ears, both her ears pierced in the pictures? And he's like, oh, yeah, totally. And
well, see,
she
knew
that only one was pierced. That was like the big
clue. First of all, I had a little problem with it because how did the wax not cover that? You know, how did that still show through? Thin. Yeah.
It's a very thin layer.
Yeah, it still fills in.
How does the guy have a
suspension of disbelief?
Wax,
you know?
Well, I just that, and again, like you said, where she brought up that, oh, both of her ears were pierced. And he's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. He would have gotten on me for missing something like that. Yeah, I thought she was going to do something with it, and criminal. She really didn't do anything with it.
Well, she's just a woman. Yeah. All she can do is go to the police and tell her crazy, like, that skirt, you know, that skirt's crazy crazy ideas, hey, you know.
The previous opinion brought to you by the year 1953. That's what I was just going to say.
Oh, man.
It's coming back.
Well, this movie was, so it's a remake of Mystery of the Wax Museum.
Which I actually prefer.
It is, it's an interesting movie. That movie was shot in two-strip Technicolor. We were watching a little bit of it here tonight because it's on the same disc. And it looks, it's a really weird look to see a movie without.
I like that look.
Looks like a colored movie to me, like somebody colored it in afterwards.
Yeah, I like that. It's almost like a Sky Captain look.
Yeah. And then, so it was remade later, obviously, as House of Wax with Paris Hilton.
Yeah, I saw it.
Alicia Keys.
I never bothered.
The whole town was wax. Really big.
The house actually was.
Yeah.
Made of wax.
The whole town was wax, except for the wax features. Yeah, everything was wax.
Everything was wax. The whole town was wax.
Was this in like Anchorage?
No, dude. It was like a fucking, remember that Swamp Thing issue where everything is fake, like a robot? Yeah. That's what House of Wax, the 2005, what was it?
Yeah. Was it 2005? I just remember the house itself.
Well, besides the wax town. The only other reason to watch that movie was to watch Paris Hilton get killed. That was the only reason I watched
it. Did they explain that at all?
Well, I didn't see that. I don't know.
Was this some place really cold?
Yeah.
Yeah, how it sustains.
Like, yeah, because the sun would never actually melt.
I don't know. Maybe at the end of it, it catches on fire. There's a guy named Vincent, I think, is the
kid. Yeah, it'd be kind of relevant.
They just needed an ending like, it's all wax.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know how in the originals he was wax?
It was Earth all along. The fucking town is wax. The world's wax.
We pulled that switcheroo on you.
Yeah.
Well, then didn't he also had the brother too, didn't he? That was the actual sculptor.
Yeah, I don't even know.
That was Vincent. Vincent was a sculptor who wore a wax mask. I think because he was disfigured under that.
Once Hilton was dead, I was kind of tuned out.
You know, they turned it into. I thought the new House of Wax was like almost a remake of like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, right.
Or something. I mean, that's kind of the vibe that they were going for because that was. In the zeitgeist at the time, the hostels, the torture porn, and the remake of Texas Chainsaw. But it's like, you know, oh, they're remaking House of Wax. And then you see it, and it's like, no, it's a literal House of Wax.
But I'd have to say, you know why I think they did that? Because the one failing I think this movie has is they're trying to get you onto the idea that just this one helper of his is the actual disfigured man doing it. That's why I don't buy this movie. There's no fucking mystery to this movie. You know Vincent Price didn't die in the fire, so you know he's the disfigured killer
How can he be the disfigured
killer? He's in a wheelchair, and his hands are ugly.
Yeah, you know? But the other guy is burning.
And he has hair. He's clearly not ugly. But neither is the fucking other guy. The other guy's clearly not ugly, you know, but they're still like, well, he's a drunk, and he painted a beautiful picture in Sing Sing, and... So they're really trying to pass off that, well, it could just be this guy working for Vincent Price that's actually the guy killing. Yeah, but I don't know. That story kind of jumped the shark a little there.
Yeah.
How did they do that in that moment?
I need a drink. I'll tell you everything. Give me alcohol. I'll tell you everything.
There was no omerta in that guy. No. They just gave it right up.
Just let him not drink for 4 hours. He's like, God, just... I don't know how they did it in Mystery of the Wax Museum. I don't know if they still framed that. Well, obviously they did because we saw him in the scene.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the story is supposed to be, maybe if you read the short story, it's almost as if Jared hired a guy to be the patsy. Like, oh, this guy's got a criminal history and is in murder.
That seems more like the way that Mystery of the Wax Museum played it, that the disfigured man was somebody, like there was more of a deal made about
that. Yeah, like Jared, he survived the fire, he's disfigured, he hires like the criminal guys.
The version of this story that has more details to it, right?
It's like,
this is the actual short story, right? Was there a short story? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is based off a short... Well, everything was, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What fucking famous horror movie, original famous horror movie is not based on a short story? The Fly, House of Wax, fucking Creature... Well, not Creature, but...
Pit and the Pendulum.
It does credit a story at the beginning of this, but I thought that was crediting the Mystery of the House of Wax.
Oh, shit. Actually, now that you said that, I should look at that. Yeah. Maybe you're right.
Or Mystery of the Wax.
I thought it was crediting an original story, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's crediting the original screenplay.
Yeah. I think one thing that makes this film work is the fact that, ironically, the director had one eye and couldn't perceive 3D. Yeah. And I think that actually worked to this director's advantage because he was actually a pretty good storyteller. Like, he does a good job making sure that you're not too bored on one shot, which I've seen films in the 1950s. You're like, dude, get off this shot. He moves the camera well. He composes well. The shadows are nice. There's a little bit of noir going on. But
even for like 3D, like he would move from, I mean, there's a couple shots at the beginning where, you know, he moves from a deep shot where the character's in the background. They walk right up to the camera, you know, maintaining that level of focus and all that in 3D. And then, like, there's a new shot, you know, or the way that he shoots off angles. So, like, instead of looking at people straight on.
Like, the railing in a lot of scenes is really nice.
So you have that little, you know.
Well, there's times.
Angling away from the camera.
In the shots in the movie, there's times it almost goes from to where you could be in Ripper, you know, Jack the Ripper's London to, you know, modern day.
With the lighting.
Not modern day, but at that time, modern, you know, New York City, because they do. They do have the dresses a little off, like you pointed out. Sometimes the suits look a little too modern.
Turn of the century.
The women are all dressed about appropriate.
But the men, they take the liberty suits
are a little off. But yeah, there's times where it does look like foggy old London, you know.
And I thought that played to its advantage.
I dig that stuff. Yeah. I eat that up. So that's probably part of why I like this movie so much.
There was definitely the gimmicky thing with the paddle ball, the guy out front, you know. But I think overall the pacing and the storytelling was solid. It wasn't just, we're going to throw things at the screen and hope they like it.
I mean, as a remake, it distills all the stuff that works the best, I think, in the original movie and just kind of compresses it and says, like, here's the great, it's like a simplified, you know, version of Mystery of the
Wax Museum. Long. This is, I just think is it? Fun. I like Mystery of the Wax Museum better. Because this, there's to me, nothing characters. Happens in this. He's just like, I'm a girl. I know that's my roommate. Silly broad.
Well, they do spend a lot
Let
of time.
Let me go here and that's all. All of this is a bunch of men telling a woman, we don't believe your story. The whole movie is
crazy.
I was going to say the whole movie. It's a bunch of guys like walking through a wax museum, being like, here's this moment. Yeah,
here's
in history,
the historical.
And here's this moment in history. Yeah. Here's this moment. And you're like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, you have these
fucking
things.
Movie
you
out of it.
Exploit them. Yeah. Well, but they do that at least on two occasions. You get like a big walking.
What is
tour.
The greatest love of all? But it's like.
Well, but I did find the first walkthrough when he was explaining to the potential investor how he made this, each one of the figures, how you had to inlay each piece of hair individually, punch that in with a scalpel. Kind of
stuff like that is interesting. Yeah. If you don't know, you know, it's like the first version of how it's made. You go to the fucking Hollywood movies and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Did you know that this movie was also supposed to be remade in Italy as a collaboration between Lucio Fulci and Dario Argento?
It would have been horrible.
No, and it was going to be called Wax Mask.
Really?
And it was remade as Wax Mask, but Lucio Fulci didn't do it. I think it was Luigi Cozzi. I'm way off.
But Dario Argento did it?
He was supposed to produce it. I don't know if he produced Wax
Mask. Okay, so none of those guys are.
No, they didn't actually. They weren't connected with it, I don't think.
It might be good. This might work out.
If you're going to remake it, now you change your vote.
No, I like. Because I like the. I like movies.
Or something?
Those two are fucking like classic Italian horror directors for a few movies.
If you're going to remake it, you got to make it in London.
That's
you
a slightly make it at ringing endorsement.
That's the most famous Wax Museum in the world. Yeah.
I say the same thing about
they probably
most horror directors.
The plug.
Most horror directors have
they peak.
Two or three of them.
Yeah.
Well, I think what Chris was saying, that if you remake this movie, you should do it in London at Madame Tussauds.
That's the only
you
place.
You still get, like, you know, foggy London streets or something, you know, like.
I don't think Wax is scary anymore.
Well, because I mean, when somebody goes to Wax, you know, it's like, when's the.
And they're all creepy. If you've ever been to one, they're all creepy.
They are. I saw this movie and then Kiss Meets the Phantom. That's the next time I saw any kind of wax figure in a movie, because they did the, you know, the figures of Kiss and wax. And then I actually went to a wax museum in Florida, and they are creepy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
the only thing creepier is when they show, like, the inside of the bodies at those museums. what they showed in the Casino Royale, the museum exhibit where they showed, like, the internal workings of people. You guys remember that? That's just disgusting.
When they
put them in like plastic, and they can show like the internal
structure
of the muscle.
No, what they do is they inject. Like, have you
disgusting.
Seen that nowadays?
I've seen.
They remove the skin.
World.
Yeah, Body World. That should be the remake.
It's like
that should be the remake.
That
she kills people. Injection.
Copyright. 2014 Saturday Night.
Oh my god. Yeah, House of Veins or some shit. It's like a weird gelatin they put inside that solidifies all through the veins and all the muscles.
That would be a much worse death, I would think.
Have you seen those? Put that in like a living person?
They do.
Is that the ones that are in... Hold on. Is that the ones that are in House on Haunted Hill? Is that those things?
I don't know.
Those are like cross sections of people.
Okay.
Yeah, these are like real museums.
Have you seen Casino Royale?
No.
No. Oh.
You didn't see the new Casino Royale?
It's like they inject something into the veins of people.
Then you should watch those.
So your veins solidify, right? And then they dissolve the flesh and the muscle and the bone away.
The only thing
that's left are these.
You should Google that shit. Yeah, it's fucking
really
crazy.
So
you're standing there just looking at somebody's like nervous system. It's
fucking nuts. Oh, yeah. And they do that too. They'll be like, well, here's the entire body. Here's the entire body.
Yeah.
Minus the muscles. Here's the entire body. Minus just like.
Yeah. And it's like
fucked up.
Anatomy. You know, they
do it. It was way cool.
It's way cool, but I don't think I could go in person. I'll look at pictures, but if I saw it in person, I'd be like, oh my God.
I was there and went through these.
They're very creepy. But they always keep the glass eyeballs, which really make it freaky. So they're looking at you like, I'm only veins.
So should we wrap it up? Final review?
Probably.
Well,
so Travis,
hold
we'll
on.
Start with you.
Before our final review, I guess let's at least talk about the reveal at the end of her hitting the mask off. Event Surprise, because we didn't talk about
it. We talked about this movie. Go ahead.
We went a little all over. But, fuck it. I guess I'll just put it in my...
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was like, I guess all I was going to say is I liked it better. So anyway, I've never liked this movie. Like mystery, because I just don't. There's no... I get it, right? I get what is cool about this movie. I get the idea that, like, I can't make beautiful things, so now I will take bodies, blah, blah, blah. But there's, like, no mystery to it. You're like, ah, that's the guy. You know, and there's, I don't know, there's just something to it that I don't know.
It's not called Mystery of the House of Wax.
Yeah, I know. I wish there was a mystery. Because there tries to be a mystery, but it's not. That's the fucking problem. You can't have a mystery, but then really not follow through with a mystery. And this tries to have the mystery of like, it looks exactly like my friend. This guy has been insane, but it just doesn't follow through with the mysteries. It's because you fucking already know, like, that's the guy in the wheelchair, you know?
Is it really a mystery, though? Or is it more just a thriller?
I think we all kind of know. I think you would read this as a mystery.
The audience knows what the characters don't, and that is the horror.
No, that's why when he stands up, it's supposed to be like, ugh!
Yeah, but
because it's supposed to be a mystery.
The audience already knew that. They don't.
Well, because it's an old movie, right? They already know, like, it's not that guy. That guy's got a wax head on, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe it's because it's Vincent Price, and we kind of know.
But if this was his first horror, they might have not expected. Sure. Like, he's a nice man. I hear him on the radio.
He's a sympathetic character.
He's very fucking sympathetic. So, yeah, I don't know. It was awesome seeing it in 3D. Once again, just because, like, yeah, they had 3D in mind in a better place back then. You know, they just weren't going to be like, hey, fucking make a buck. I mean, I'm sure they were.
Warner Brothers, yes.
I'm sure it was such a new technology, they could have just cheaped their way through it real quickly, right? They had to be like, fuck, if we're going to make it in 3D, we got to make it in 3D. We can't just, like, doop and collect the paycheck, right? We got to make it in 3D. So it was nice seeing it in 3D. Like I said, I prefer even the when Faye Ray hits the mask off the villain in the original Mystery of the Wax Museum. To me, it's a little bit more action-packed. It's a little bit more like, oh my God. Because it's like, back in the 50s, it's like, all right, they made like a wax sculpture to put over his head. But like in the 30s, I'm like, they can't do that. This is 1930-something, you know? It's not going to look that great. And you're like, oh my God, that looked good. So I maybe just...
Did you see Mystery first?
No.
Okay.
No, I originally saw this on the DVD when they packaged this and... So they've always done Mystery of the House Wax.
Mystery of the Wax Museum.
Mystery of the Wax Museum. Mystery of the Wax Museum with House of Wax. So as soon as I saw this one, I was like, oh, I'll watch Mystery. It's got Faye Ray. And I just thought it was... Star of King Kong.
Lionel Atwell, star of every Frankenstein movie. Yeah.
And I just thought the original is a little bit more, just the dialogue's more, it's action-packed. They're like, hey, what's going on in the news today?
It's like a His Girl Friday.
And I think that, like, makes up for, because, I mean, okay, two people die in this whole movie. I mean, that was a murder. That was a horror movie in the 1950s. Like, there was a murder. What a horror. You know, it was a horror movie. Just having one murder in the first 5 minutes of the movie. And that was the horror movie. The rest of it is like, we have to snoop around. Let's hope he don't catch us. I mean, that was the horrors. Let's not get caught by the killer as we snoop around trying to catch the killer. It was Scooby-Doo. It was the original horror.
I was just getting ready to say, I got away with it was with them dang kids.
Fuck, hey, that's the way every horror... Well, no, it's usually the cops like, get on, you know. But yeah, just the idea that... I mean, of course, old horror movies are a little slower paced just for that reason. It is supposed to be like, oh, such a fucking traumatic like experience watching somebody murder somebody on the screen. You know? But, that's horrible.
Until Alfred Hitchcock did, what was that movie that he did? It was like Topaz or Torn Curtain, where he like actually showed like how long it takes. Oh, that was the intention of a scene where somebody's like strangling somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Like
oh.
How long it actually takes to strangle a person, and it just goes on and on. You're like, jeez, this is uncomfortable. He's the first guy to do that.
So I actually, shit.
Yay or nay?
I mean, I guess I'll say yay just because it is. I will.
All right. Come for the 3D, stay for the movie.
It's one of those. Yeah, yeah. Come for the 3D, stay for the movie. So yeah, I mean, just because it is Vincent Price, you can't go wrong with his performance, and everybody else could have worked a little bit better, but yeah, oh yeah, everybody else except for that one detective, the one that made the achoo joke. I thought that guy was awesome. He just had a look that he's like, I don't believe this skirt, nah, not a way. Like, he just had that look on his face like, that guy does not believe her. I believe that actor, he's a good guy. So yeah, I will recommend it, even though I'm fucking bagging on it.
I would say very entertaining. If for nothing else, the first 30 minutes or so, I think, are pretty awesome. That first fire, which happens in the first 10, 15 minutes, that fire sequence, yeah. The fight in the fire, in 3D, watching the flames, you can tell that it's not a composite sort of
fake fire. That was like a rule
fire.
Of horror movies back then, right? Fighting amongst fire.
Well, and seeing
it's
it in
like,
3D,
that's dangerous.
You know, it was really impressive. And looking at the sculptures in 3D, I thought were really cool. And mm-hmm. And the fog in 3D.
Like, you could see how really wax awesome. Would be, a wax statue is creepy in 3D. Because, yeah, you're just...
Yeah. I mean, I didn't buy the mystery for a second, because we all,
right,
in hindsight, kind of know who it probably is. But, I mean, just for that alone, that's a very impressive 3D technology. Even in today's standards, it looked like pretty impressive, real. You know, it didn't really get campy until they started throwing things at the screen, like, yeah. Like the paddleball guy.
Yeah.
The paddleball guy, which shows about halfway in the film.
That was fantastic. How close did that come to you?
Yeah.
Like just on a TV monitor. Like, imagine, like, back in the 50s when you were, like, you know, very small compared to that screen, and you know.
Yeah, but then it's the gimmick again. But I mean, before then, you're like, wow, this is really impressive. And if you are, like I am, a diehard Indiana Jones fan, you can totally see where Spielberg got that closing scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it is the opening scene of either this or Mystery of the Wax Museum. I'm not sure. I haven't seen that one.
But burns,
the melts, melting wax, you know, bodies burning in wax, definitely is Ark of the Covenant opening all the way. So, yeah, I'd say at least the first half hour, if not the rest anyway.
All right. I love this movie as a kid, you know, and that's the thing. I'm trying to judge it as when I first saw it, not as the jaded, we've seen everybody cut to pieces with every kind of implement now.
Yeah.
But back then, as a kid watching that creature feature, that, you know, or the monster matinee and seeing this movie, it's like, oh, this is awesome. And it brought such an effect. And I had never seen it in 3D until now. So that brought a lot more depth to the movie and a lot of really cool scenes.
Literally.
Exactly. But I do love Vincent Price. You know, I've not everything he does. There's the
Madhouse is a fucking wretched movie.
Yeah. What was the other one? That one where he's the hairdresser. I can't remember. It's House of Blood or something. It's,
yeah, it's like, a Air of Blood.
Theater of Blood, where he's a Shakespearean actor and he kills all of his
critics. But at one point he does the Butch and he's got like the afro hair. Yeah.
And there was the abominable Dr. Fibes.
Yeah, I've never seen
that. Dr. Fibes Rides Again. And there's a sequel to that one.
Yeah, Dr. Fibes Rises Again.
Yeah.
I think it's Rides Again, isn't it? Rides Again?
I think it's Rises. Rises?
I think it's Rides. Anyway.
But to me, Vincent Price has always been... I mean, like I said, I do. It's Karloff, Lugosi, and then Price for me. But Price always had that depth of character. His emotions, you could feel for this character, no matter who he was in this movie or any of his other movies. There was a way, you know, you would either feel very creeped out by him or very sympathetic towards him. Mm-hmm. And I think in this movie,
both at the same time.
Exactly. And this movie is how he brought that together, because here's an artist who lives and dies. These are his children. So then I look at it from that standpoint as a father. Somebody took my children away from me, you know, and I couldn't protect them. So now I'm destroyed. I can't even recreate. I can't bring them back. There's nothing I can do. I'm trapped in this broken body. So now eventually madness creeps into it. I think he was a little mad to begin with. Well, yeah, like we talked
instead
about.
Instead of having a real family.
He has his art, know. And I think he was willing to die for his art. He tried to save it what little he could, you know. And then in the end, he wound up in this broken body. Bronson's character in this movie,
which kind of goes back to Burton's Batman in a lot of ways, because the Joker is an art fiend, if I remember, in the first in Burton's Batman,
right.
I'm the world's first homicidal artist.
And he falls in the pit just like the Joker does.
And like I said, some of these characters, there's points where Carolyn Jones, who I love, she's near and dear to my heart. She's my favorite creepy girl. She was way before Elvira, but in this movie, she's just such a ditz. But that's what she's supposed to bring out, and she plays it just to where she's infuriatingly. So I love the performances. The movie in 3D is definitely, if you have a chance to watch it in 3D, go out and do it. If you love the movie before, it adds a depth to it. Again, no pun intended, that you hadn't seen before. And if you haven't seen it, go out and watch it. But don't go in thinking like the modern horror fan, because like Travis said, there's two murders, and they're over pretty quickly into the movie.
Yeah, only one of which you see. I mean, she's already dead in a bed.
Yeah, she's just,
you don't even see her get murdered.
Yeah. So, and again, but they said she was, didn't they say she was drugged?
Yeah.
They think so.
Before she was strangled.
Which was the same drug that he wanted to give the other girl at the end, because he didn't want the horror on her face when he waxed her, because it would show through, and he can't change that anymore.
That's a creepy idea.
It is a creepy idea. I don't want the horror. But to me, that again, what we were talking about earlier.
We don't want a real expression of a girl.
He owns them. They belong to him. They are now his to hold forever.
Yeah. Which is it goes back to the sexual politics.
It's a great movie. I love this. Since I was a kid, I still love it, so I still highly recommend it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love this movie. I mean, unabashedly. I think, you know, more so than, I think it is a horror classic. I mean, I think it's one of the, like, you know, the things that you have to, the signposts in the road along, you know, the road of horror is this movie for a couple of reasons. I mean, because it established Vincent Price. I don't know if we talked about like his Edgar Allan Poe cycle that he did with Roger Corman.
Yeah.
They did that.
We haven't talked about
Fall of the House of Usher and The Raven.
Tales
and
Master
Red Death.
And Telltale Heart. I mean, those are all like, you know, and Pit and the Pendulum. I mean, like really good movies from the 60s. I mean, this guy had a fantastic career. Didn't really fall out of like favor, I don't think, with Hollywood, really. I mean, he was still.
Well, he did, actually. He was blacklisted because he was a. I don't know if he was.
Was he a commie?
I don't know. That's what happened to a lot of
them. Well, I don't know if he was. But I think he was a commie.
So that's prior to this, then.
Yeah. That's why I think he had to do horror.
Oh.
Because that's what happens in your career when you get blacklisted. It's like, well, fuck, now,
well, it worked out for him,
like,
then,
okay, well, you're clear and good. yeah, I guess it did work out. But who knows? Yeah. I mean, maybe, what if he was one of those George Reeves guys that hated being the fucking man in the monkey suit? What if he hated being the horror guy? What if he really wanted to be a great actor?
He wanted to be a painter?
Well, what the fuck?
Because
bitch,
that was his actual thing. Like I've heard interviews with his daughter. Is it Patricia?
Yeah,
Patricia,
his daughter Patricia wrote something? A book.
Yeah, she was interviewed on some show that I listened to at one point. But, you know, talking about, like, you know, her life with her dad. But, I mean, like, there's, you know, this guy, this is probably my favorite movie that he is in. I mean, I love the character. Because it's
bold
got that
statement.
Split,
let's see how it works out for you.
That split personality, you know, where he is both the, you know, sympathetic quasi-protagonist and the disfigured, you know, like serial killer, the Jack the Ripper.
But he was pushed to that point.
You know, well, yeah, no, I get that. I get
he
that.
Is that's very sympathetic at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, even toward the end, I mean, they're trying to play that up. It's like, look, you know, it's like, you know, you're. it's not that he's justified in what he's doing, right? Sure. Because he's crazy he's killing people. But it's like you can kind of like side with it. It's like, well, you know, this guy, he's been screwed by life and now he's getting back at, you know.
You know why I think this movie is so important, or why it was so important in horror? It's just because it's the opposite of the Phantom of the Opera. Phantom of the Opera, there's obviously a man wearing a mask that you rip it off, and oh my God, it's a grotesque man, where this is a normal-looking man that you get to take the mask off, and he's grotesque. Holy fuck, you totally changed the game, man. Horror will never be the same.
You flipped it. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's important also because it was the 3D, the technical aspect.
Well, yeah, for sure.
I think that's why it's...
Well, yeah, but, I mean, even the mystery, the way XP seems, just the idea of why this story, like... so important in the horror. It's reversed engineered
This is the thing I like about it. It's like, it's ghoulish, right? It's ghoulish in this kind of 1950s kind of innocent way of, you know, like you couldn't make this movie now without making it more,
more
explicit, cynical, grisly, right? Like, well, it's dealing with very grisly stuff, but it deals with it in a way that you don't really see it. It's more like playfully ghoulish, like a Scooby-Doo episode.
There is, yeah, and that might be restrictions of the cinematic medium. I mean, they probably wouldn't let you.
But I like, but that's why I like
releasing a film like that.
Now, you know?
Yeah.
It's when you have those restrictions, they tend to be more atmospheric.
I'll play the cynic for a minute. I do like how Vincent Price's character is all for the art, for the art's sake. And it almost echoed, I guess, the altruistic Warner Brothers creed. And then they said, well, we're gonna go ahead and cash out by the end of this movie. And that's kind of what they do with the 3D technology. We would really like to make a historical drama, but we know people aren't going to watch that. So we're just going to show you a real horror filled fright fest, and here you go, have fun with that. That's kind of what the film ends up being. Vincent Price is trying to make this beautiful piece of art, and then he just says, ah, screw it.
Yeah, we're horrors.
So there you go.
This is what's gonna sell, so let's sell it on top. People like it.
Your pretext. No, your subtext on top. Whatever.
Whoa.
On top of your text.
Deep,
beneath,
man,
beneath
deep.
your text. I mean, I think that, you know, it doesn't bother me that there's no mystery in this thing. I saw this thing when I was a kid, and it was like blatantly obvious that, you know, Vincent Price was the guy. But I think it is that kind of, I think that's the contract that the filmmaker has made with the audience. It's like, you're going in there and like, you know, as the audience that, you know, these people that you're looking at are coming close to danger because, you know, there's something off about that guy. He's the guy who's doing all this stuff. They don't know. When are they going to figure out? It feels like an eternity that you're sitting there going, like, you know, they're standing right next to the fire, metaphorically.
Especially because, like, he's always like, you would be perfect for my next.
I need your body.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, God,
you need to come back later
while we were watching
when I'm alone, like,
this guy's
so I can sculpt you.
Because he keeps on saying, like, you have lovely hands. My hands are all like, hey, can you go over there and run over there and get that for me? Because
You're so much quicker.
My legs don't carry me.
As you may know.
It's like he's laying there. Huh? So it's like, oh, I get it. He can walk.
He's being convincing.
He's overlay.
Oh, because cripples constantly talk about their handicap torture. Yeah. As you know, I've always, ever since the accident, I haven't been able to walk.
I like the way we've lapsed into our Vincent Price accents. Now, this is pretty good. Hello, my name is Vincent Price.
And the spider comes chompity chomp.
So I'll totally recommend it. I mean, I think there's a lot to like about this movie. So, mailbag. Igor?
Where are you, Igor?
Okay, Igor, thanks a lot. We got
get out of here.
On our Facebook page. And just so you know, listener, that you too can send us comments by going to facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. Every week we post what we're going to be watching next week. You comment on it, we are guaranteed to read it on air. This week we have a comment from Gary Lazich.
Thanks, Gary.
That's what we're calling him.
Name, right? Gary says of House of Wax, it's one of my favorites, even if I only did see it on television. Well, I mean, we Agree. Most of us agree.
You must check out the 3D Blu-ray.
Check it out on 3D, Gary.
Absolutely.
If you have that opportunity, that is definitely the way to see this movie. I think that's agreed
absolutely
by all of us.
Absolutely.
See it in 3D.
Agreed by all.
All right, so that's it for House of Wax on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week is going to be Travis's pick. Travis, what are we watching?
We will be watching Masters of the Universe, starring Dolph Lundgren and Frank Langella.
Oh, man, I'm going to wear my underoos for that one.
I can't wait.
It's going to be great.
Since awesome. 1986.
So can we say by the power of the Freak Show on that one?
Yes!
Well, we can try.
All right, so that's it. You can catch all of our past episodes, all 101 of them, I think. Woo-hoo! This is 102.
Wow.
On iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Podbay FM, Castroller, Podbay, and TuneIn Radio. If I didn't say that already. Nice. So until next week, the basement is closed.